Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayen Deng-Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, March 26th, 2020. Coronavirus leads to thousands of South Sudanese being stranded at the Uganda border.
My breasts are engorging, painful and dripping. On Tuesday, I found Okello, who is responsible here, but he told me it was too late for me to cross to South Sudan.
And health experts worry about large church gatherings in neighboring Ethiopia.
Basically, it's a lack of understanding. It is not a kind of resisting the regulations. It is a lack of understanding toward this disastrous time.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Hundreds of South Sudanese who want to rejoin their families are stranded at Ilegu along the Uganda-South Sudan border after Ugandan authorities closed the border last Saturday to combat the spread of the coronavirus. Uganda police say they deported dozens of South Sudanese trying to sneak into Uganda through unofficial crossing points. Onen Walter Solomon reports for VOA from Ilegu in Uganda's Amuru district.
Most of the stranded travelers are trying to reunite with their families in Uganda or South Sudan. 38-year-old Jennifer Nimungu, a mother of seven, says she left her three-month-old baby with her husband in Nimule and crossed into Uganda on Monday to receive food rations for her children at the Pagirinya refugee settlement camp in Adjumani district. Nimungu says when she returned that night, Ugandan authorities in Ilegu closed the border with South Sudan. Nimungu pleaded with authorities to let her get back to South Sudan to breastfeed baby to no avail. Speaking in her local Aluru language, Nimungu says on Tuesday, some people at the Ugandan border asked her to pay money to let her cross into South Sudan.
My breasts are engorging, painful and dripping. On Tuesday, I found Okello, who is responsible here, but he told me it was too late for me to cross to South Sudan.
A driver who prefers to be identified only as Issa for fear of possible reprisals from authorities says some Ugandan authorities at the border allow certain cars and people to cross into South Sudan.
Authorities are allowing harakas to cross on corruption. The ways they are agreeing with them are not officials to allow numberless cars to exit to South Sudan. Even Diso is aware of that. They are well connected.
Diso in Uganda stands for District Internal Security Officer. Several calls to authorities at Ilegu for comment went unanswered. 30-year-old Jacob Yak, a South Sudanese who is trying to return to South Sudan from Uganda, says he does not understand why he cannot return home.
For us, we are leaving the country. We are leaving Uganda. So we don't pose any threat to the country. So they should just allow us to exit, then bar people from coming in. So the border should be open for those who are leaving, then should be closed for those who are coming in.
Patrick Jimmy Okema, police spokesman for Uganda's northern region, told South Sudan in Focus that Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni's directive to close borders as a measure to control the spread of COVID-19 is for the benefit of the public and cannot be compromised.
It is not an individual problem. We are looking at a general issue. If I have an issue as me, whom you are speaking to, it is my own issue, but my issue should not affect the entire public. If I have my family across, let the family remain there.
Some passengers who agreed to speak off the record said both desperate Ugandans and South Sudanese have resorted to crossing the border through the bush. Amuru district authorities have told reporters in northern Uganda that at least 55 South Sudanese nationals who crossed the borders to Uganda via the bush were deported. Okema says police officers must ensure that the public adheres to the presidential directive to keep the border closed for at least 1 month to fight the spread of coronavirus. For VOA News, I am Onen Walter Solomon in Amuru District, Northern Uganda.
Health experts in Ethiopia are raising concern as some religious leaders continue to host large gatherings, despite government orders not to do so in the wake of the coronavirus outbreak. Simon Marks reports from Addis Ababa.
Earlier this week, Ethiopia's government ordered security forces to enforce a ban on large gatherings aimed at preventing the spread of COVID-19. Ethiopia has seen only 12 cases and no deaths from the virus, and authorities would like to keep it that way. But enforcing the orders has proven difficult as religious groups continue to meet and, according to religious leaders, fail to treat the risks seriously. Daniel Seth Michael Feleke, media director for the Ethiopian Orthodox Tewahedo Church, spoke to VOA by telephone.
Basically, it's a lack of understanding. It is not a kind of resisting the regulations. It is a lack of understanding towards this disastrous time. Some people did not really understand or fully capture the sensitivity of the issue. That's why we've seen some irregularities. But soon this will be corrected because we are also using our media and administrative channels to regulate this issue.
Feleke also said that many people in Ethiopia are affected by misinformation and superstitious beliefs propagated through social media.
And there are also misconceptions due to the social media. People have different information. So now we are trying to do two things. One, you know, to propagate and to disseminate the correct information to the people. And the other one is also, you know, to protect the people from wrong information. There are plenty of wrong information, you know, which are superstitious and irresponsible information.
Religious leaders throughout the country have come up with specific guidelines for churches and mosques on how to worship safely. The rules include keeping a distance of at least 1.5 meters between each individual. Teshome Fikre, Secretary General of Catholic Bishops Conference of Ethiopia, spoke via a messaging app.
Church services are still continuing with a very few number of people. We have created awareness, and then there are ushers in the churches who are assigning places. In bigger crowd time, we had 6 people sitting on one bench. But now we have 2 people sitting in one bench.
Still, Teshome says he remains very worried about people flouting the rules.
People are still feel that nothing is happening. And that worries us, that scares us, because the awareness which is given by the government on TV, on radios, on telephones, on Facebook, people are not still aware how dangerous and how serious the case of coronavirus. You feel that people are just ignoring the fact that there is coronavirus. I think ignorance and ignoring the truth is dangerous.
Aware of such risks, the Africa Centres for Disease Control and Prevention is monitoring how governments are implementing bans on large gatherings. The organisation says that if people follow the rules, the number of cases on the continent should stay relatively low. Simon Marks for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
Malawi has ordered opposition political parties to halt coronavirus awareness campaigns, calling the efforts a politicization of the pandemic. While Malawi has yet to confirm a case of the virus, President Peter Mutharika last week declared COVID-19 a national disaster, and opposition parties have been going door-to-door to educate people on symptoms and prevention. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi government spokesman Mark Bodoman says opposition parties must immediately stop education campaigns on the coronavirus, also known as COVID-19. Speaking by telephone, he says their messages are not crafted by health experts, making the efforts a political move that could do more harm than good.
What we are also saying is, yes, there can be partners that would want to come in to help. But they need to go through the Ministry of Health, because the Ministry of Health is the one spearheading all activities around the COVID-19.
The opposition, Malawi Congress Party and the United Transformation Movement Party, have been going door to door in rural areas to raise awareness of symptoms and prevention. They say their campaigners wear masks and gloves and preach hand washing to prevent coronavirus from spreading. The leader of the UTM party's coronavirus awareness campaign, Felix Njawala, says there is nothing political in their messaging.
If the person doesn't know anything about it, then we start enlightening the person about coronavirus, what it has done, you know, in other countries. Then from there, we provide details of the measures that are there for them to protect themselves from contacting the virus. Then we were providing them with hand washing soap.
Malawi's healthcare rights activists have welcomed all coronavirus education campaigns. Former president of Malawi's National Organization of Nurses and Midwives, Dorothy Ngoma, spoke by telephone.
Do you think that committee of ministers, they are going to manage to run top to bottom to teach people in the villages? I don't think so. We should allow whatever party, the chiefs, the churches, to continue doing this 24 hours a day until we make sure that this infection is not going to knock on our doors.
As the coronavirus spreads across Africa, Malawi has intensified screening for the virus at all entry points and hospitals. Health authorities say over 500 people are being monitored while on self-quarantine across the country. The squabble over opposition political parties' coronavirus campaigning comes as Malawi's Electoral Commission on Monday said a reline of last year's annulled polls would be held on July 2nd. The Constitutional Court last month overturned the May 19 election, citing widespread irregularities. President Mutharika's party is appealing the decision at the Supreme Court. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
Many Sudanese were shocked to hear Defense Minister Lieutenant General Jamal Aldin Omar died early yesterday of a heart attack in Juba. Sudanese government officials say Jamal's death is a great loss to the country and has left a vacuum in the transitional government. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Khartoum.
General Jamal was named defense minister in September after serving as the head of security and defense in Sudan's military council following the ouster of President Omar al-Bashir. He was born in River Nile State in 1960. He earned a diploma in military science from the Sudanese Military College, Batch 31, and a diploma in international studies at the University of Nairobi. Sudanese Prime Minister Abdalla Hamdok offered condolences to Jamal's family and the Sudan Armed Forces leadership. Speaking in Arabic, Hamdok called Jamal one of the strongest members of his cabinet.
Jamal was faithful in carrying out his task and duties and was seen by many as a beacon of inspiration. He was known for his patriotism to this nation. He was the bridge between the military and civilians during the transitional period.
Speaking in Arabic, Cabinet Affairs Minister Omar Manis says Jamal combined his military background and his patriotic spirit to convince his colleagues in the cabinet to stand firm during the chaos in Sudan.
He inspired everyone to perform their task and duties with sincerity during this transitional.
Various Sudanese political parties offered their condolences to Jamal's family and the government. Omar Al-Diger, chairman of the Sudanese Congress Party, tweeted yesterday, "This is a great loss for our nation at this crucial time." Sadiq Al-Mahdi, head of the Umma National Party, described Jamal as a martyr who died while working for true peace in Sudan. Jamal was part of the government delegation attending peace talks with the armed rebel groups in Juba when he died. Officials say the talks have been put on hold in light of Jamal's death for 1 week. Speaking in Arabic, Muhammad Adil, political secretary for the Umma Party under the leadership of Mubarak Al-Fadil, says Jamal worked tirelessly to ensure Sudan was secure.
As Umma Party, we extend our deepest condolences to the head of Sudan's Sovereign Council, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, and to the Sudanese Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok, and to the entire family members of the late Jamal Omar, his wife.
General Jamal's body was flown to Khartoum Wednesday afternoon and buried last evening in Al Farouk graveyard. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Listening to South Sudan in Focus. Coming up, drivers in South Sudan are petitioning lawmakers to make one big change. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People will speak out on important questions. The question today:
when was the last time you told someone you appreciate them, and what was it for?
I don't remember the very last time, but what I can remember now is telling my girlfriend that she was beautiful. She is beautiful, and I can't just let her go.
Just this morning, I did appreciate my daughter for the progress that she's made and for working so hard and for everything that she's doing, you know, trying to learn things, doing this. There are many things that she's really surprising me for. So, yeah, just this morning, I did that.
2-3 days ago, it was just to say thank you and show more encouragement. It was my daughter for coming first position in school, and I needed to appreciate her so that she can continue on that same track.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. An Israeli company called The Green Horizon says it is working to increase food production in South Sudan after the U.S. Treasury Department lifted its sanctions on the company's chief executive officer and his company late last month. David Monodanga has this report for VOA from Juba.
The ban was lifted on General Israel Ziv and his assets after the Department of the Treasury's Office of Foreign Assets Control, or OFAC, said sufficient measures were put in place to ensure that Ziv will no longer obstruct the peace in South Sudan, according to the U.S. Embassy. Ziv, a retired general in the Israel Defense Forces, and his company Global CST, along with agriculture company The Green Horizon, were sanctioned in 2018 for allegedly supplying weapons and ammunition to both government and opposition forces in South Sudan. U.S. Embassy spokesman Jonathan Sebra says Ziv asked to be removed from OFAC's specially designated list.
After a lengthy and thorough process of negotiation, the Department of the Treasury's Office of Foreign Assets Control, OFAC, is satisfied that sufficient measures are in place to ensure that Israel Ziv will no longer be able to engage in actions or policies that have the purpose or effect of expanding or extending the conflict in South Sudan or obstructing the peace process.
In deciding whether to include or remove any individual or company from the specially designated nationals list, OFAC draws on information from many sources, including U.S. government agencies, foreign governments, UN experts, and reporters, says Sebra.
Any individual or entity on the specially designated nationals list who believes that he, she, or it should not be included may petition for delisting by sending a letter to the Director of the Office of Foreign Assets Control, OFAC, explaining his, her, or its reasons. OFAC will respond to any such communication and undertake an evaluation of the petition.
The Treasury Department says Ziv used Green Horizon as a cover for the sale of approximately $150 million worth of weapons to the government, including rifles and grenade launchers. Ziv categorically denied those allegations, telling journalists in Juba, Global CST never engaged in illegal arms dealing, and Green Horizon was raising local communities' livelihoods while addressing South Sudan's hunger crisis. In a WhatsApp interview with South Sudan in Focus, Ziv says he felt insulted by the U.S. sanctions, but now feels as though a heavy weight has been lifted from his shoulders. Ziv told South Sudan in Focus, quote, I was sure that I was doing a very good deed, but found myself accused of doing horrible things, representing the complete opposite of my doings, as if I was a war criminal. This was an unbearable burden. I do not even wish on my enemies, but I was also happy to discover some good virtues against the hardships, especially the trust I was given by the government of South Sudan and from my own Israeli government." Unquote. Yohash Zohar, managing director of the Green Horizon, who also spoke to South Sudan in Focus from Israel via WhatsApp, says the negative reaction caused by the sanctions forced the Green Horizon agriculture project to lay off workers.
"It actually forced us to send home approximately 80% of our workforce, amounting to hundreds of people, in order of keeping the project alive. It was either this or shutting the project completely. 2019 became a lost year for us, as we only fought to keep the project alive with minimal activity."
With the sanctions lifted, Zoha says the Green Horizon plans to bring back the project to full productivity. Green Horizon has farms here in Juba, at Jebel Ladu County, Bor, Renk, and in Torit. Before the U.S. Treasury Department imposed sanctions on Ziff and his assets, the project employed some 360 permanent local staff and between 350 and 1,200 non-permanent workers each year. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
In Australia, riot squad officers fitted out with masks and personal protective equipment will be deployed to enforce strict social distancing rules imposed to try to stop the spread of COVID-19. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Australians are facing unprecedented measures that further restrict their freedoms as the COVID-19 outbreak intensifies. Those caught disregarding social distancing regulations could be fined or jailed. Officials in the state of New South Wales have criticised reckless and irresponsible behaviour that endangers the lives of others. 70,000 police officers, including the riot squad, are preparing to enforce the physical distancing orders. New penalties also apply to those who refuse to self-quarantine. Australians are encouraged to report breaches anonymously to a national crime hotline. Last week, warm autumn weather attracted thousands to Sydney's Bondi Beach, flouting a ban on large outdoor gatherings of more than 500 people. Places of worship have also been closed down, along with libraries, swimming pools and museums. Prime Minister Scott Morrison says other traditional events will be curtailed.
Weddings can continue to be conducted where it is just the couple, the celebrant, and the witnesses. That's no more than five people. And the 4 square metre rule has to be observed within the venue in which that's taking place. But large gatherings for weddings, sadly, won't be possible. Some of the events that have been some of the major transmitting events, it has been exactly these types of events, particularly weddings. And that is why, regretfully, we have to be able to put these arrangements in place.
The economic impact of COVID-19 in Australia continues to mount. Travel agents and airlines have said thousands of staff members will lose their jobs. Much of Australia is in lockdown. Travel between states is restricted, and all foreign nationals are prevented from entering the country. The government has also banned Australian citizens from overseas travel in an attempt to slow the spread of the new coronavirus. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Some drivers of passenger service vehicles in the South Sudan capital Juba today complained to lawmakers and the Interior Ministry over what they say amounts to extortion. The drivers say the Interior Ministry allows cars with tinted windows to be imported into the country, but later imposes fines on people driving the cars. Demo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
Traffic police in Juba have ramped up operations to crack down on drivers of tinted window screens and left-hand door commuter vehicles, imposing fines of up to 10,000 South Sudanese pounds. Dozens of drivers Tuesday, represented by the Transport Union, presented a petition to lawmakers in the National Legislative Assembly protesting the crackdown. David Jacob, who represents the group, says the constant harassment by traffic police and the illegal fines eat into their daily earnings.
We are facing many challenges in the public transport, and we have come here to get a solution. One of our issues as drivers is that our factory window screens are tinted, and we don't have any law that prohibits, and they fine us a lot of money without Form 15.
Speaking in Arabic, taxi driver Martin Suleiman says taxi drivers are citizens and have rights.
We want you, the police, to have mercy on us. We have children that we are feeding through this public transport. As you know, we don't have jobs in this country.
Speaking in Arabic, Juba resident Murad Musika, who drives a private Noha taxi, says drivers with left-hand doors are given a license and hours later are fined 10,000 South Sudanese pounds.
Arabat number plate Khashi Ubabu Shamal.
Who is to blame here? Is it the civilian who is wrong to bring a car, or it is the government institution which licensed that particular car and allowed it to enter?
Musika accuses traffic police of collecting the money using fake forms.
In any country, the tax collected enters the government account using Form 15. When I was taken to the traffic police hangar, I asked them to give me Form 15 so that I can be sure that the 10,000 that I'm paying is going to the government treasury as per the regulation of the Ministry of Finance. But I was shocked to find out that the receipts are not lawful.
Yohana Bonjo is spokesman for the South Sudan Transitional National Legislative Assembly, says the driver's petition will be handed to a specialized committee.
I believe that some of the issues raised, actually, which are pertinent, includes one, the JCC road permit, which 8,000 is collected biannually. Number two is the driver's union road permit, which 5,500 is collected annually. Number three is the left-hand driver's door, which 10,000 South Sudanese pounds is collected monthly. And we have number four, factory tinted window screen, in which 5,000 is collected. 5,000 SSP is collected biannually.
Bonjo says drivers also complained about parking fees and road user charges. He says lawmakers and the Interior Ministry will look into all the complaints. Daniel Justin Bola, a spokesperson for the South Sudan National Police Service, says once lawmakers respond, the ministry will act accordingly. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
And that's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Susanna by Sauti Sol.
Ila wengi
alinyimwa tabia na shefu kabarikiwa mwanamme hisia.
We've been listening to Saudi Soul with the song Susanna. I'm Ayen Dangbior in Washington. Thanks for listening. And remember to join us tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
And I see you in China.